Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor podcast. Today we're talking about overcoming the trauma of betrayal. As you may have heard me talk about before, it's so important to get to the root cause behind health and skin issues. And that's the case here. We want to make sure that if there's any trauma from betrayal or emotional upset, we want to address that so that we can have optimal health and vitality. So I asked my guest today to come on to talk about this. Dr. Debbie Seiler is a transpersonal psychologist, a health mindset and personal development expert. She's a speaker, coach, and author of the Amazon number one bestselling book, The Unshakable Woman, 4 Steps to Rebuilding Your Body, Mind, and Life After a Life Crisis. Debbie has contributed to Fox, CBS, the Dr. Oz Show, TEDx, The Huffington Post, Shape, Self, Health, Forbes, Psychology Today, just to name a few. And her doctoral studies led her to 2 discoveries around how women experience and heal from betrayal. Based on her findings, along with 27 years of health, mindset, and life coaching, she's created a proven approach to help women heal physically, mentally, and emotionally from the trauma of betrayal. On today's podcast, Debbie shares her findings from her study, including how betrayal impacts us physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and we discuss how to overcome the trauma of betrayal and why it's so essential to do so. So please enjoy this interview. Debbie, it's so great to have you back on my podcast.
Oh, thanks so much. Looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you were on my podcast a while back, but a lot's happened in your life since then. And so today we're talking about betrayal and how it really can impact us on a number of different levels, maybe in a way that could surprise people, because betrayal is one of those things where it's like, you know, everybody experiences it, but what the kind of impact that it can have on our lives can be devastating, right?
Oh, it's huge. It can impact us physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. And it hurts so much because we're never betrayed by someone we don't know. I mean, it's by the people closest to us. And, you know, think about it. If the people we trusted the most prove untrustworthy, who do we trust? If the ones we'd run to, you know, when someone else was causing harm, when those are the people that are causing the harm, where do we go? And really with betrayal, it's a breaking of a spoken or unspoken rule. And it happens with, you know, with someone in a position of authority or a family member or a partner or a friend, coworker, self. It's widespread.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what led you to be so interested in this topic?
You know, I had a betrayal from my family, and you know how the universe works. We don't learn the lesson we were supposed to learn, so we get another opportunity in the form of another relationship to have us learn something. And then 3 years ago, it was my husband, and it sent me right into this PhD program in transpersonal psychology, the psychology of transformation and human potential. I had to know, you know, why people do what they do, you know, how does the mind work and how I could heal. So then it was time to do a study, and I studied how women experience betrayal, what holds them back, and what helps them heal. And we discovered that while we can stay in any stage for years, decades, a lifetime, if we're going to heal, this is women, because that's who I studied, we're going to go through 5 stages. And what's even more exciting is now we know what happens physically, mentally, emotionally at every stage and what it takes to move from one stage to the next.
Okay, well, where do we start with all this? Do you want to talk about the stages?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, the setup is like this. And this is not a blame or judgment thing at all. This is what I typically saw in this study. So imagine 4 legs of a table. And if the 4 legs are mental and physical and emotional and spiritual, what I saw with every single woman that I studied was there is this prioritizing of the mental and the physical. It's as if our minds are telling our bodies what to do and we go around and do it. And that's because women are so capable. We're able to do it, so we do. But there's this real lack of paying attention to the emotional and the spiritual. So we can imagine we're not really balanced. And that's such a great setup, because then our betrayal experience happens. And here's stage two. And this is the breakdown of the body, the mind, and the worldview. Here's the shock. And this shock is imprinted right on us. And the breakdown of the body. Now the stress response is in, you know, is fully engaged in high gear. So we're setting ourselves up for all kinds of adrenal issues, gut issues, extreme exhaustion, things like that. Our mind, we're in this complete stage of chaos, confusion, brain fog, overwhelm. We can't make sense of this because these are the people we trusted the most. And it's a breakdown of the worldview, because our worldview is based on the rules that guide us and govern us, and it allows us to make sense of, okay, so I can trust you. I know I don't trust you. I can, you know, it's how we govern it. So a betrayal shatters all of that. And it can take, you know, 30 years to build trust and moments to tear it down. So this is this is the scariest stage, because our worldview as we've known it no longer exists, but a new one hasn't been rebuilt yet. So this is terrifying. From here, we move into stage three, and here's where survival instincts emerge. And think about it. If you were walking down the street and the ground were to bottom out, you would do everything in your power to grab hold of whatever you could, right? Because you want to survive. And this is where it's so practical. It's, how will I get through this day? How will I pay for this? How will I take care of my kids? Where will I live? You know, and it's like, if you can't help me, get out of my way. It is a very practical energy. It is driven by fear. The stress response is still fully engaged, and we're creating symptoms, illness, conditions, disease. Once we're able to survive and we figure out how we can do it, like, okay, so I'll live here. I can get this job. I can, you know, support myself this way or that, whatever it is. We slowly move into stage four. And stage four is, it's finding and adjusting to a new normal. And this is a stage where it's, if you've ever moved, you're moving into your new house, condo, apartment, whatever. It's not really comfortable yet. You don't know where to go for your coffee. You don't know where your dry cleaners is. You haven't figured it all out. You haven't moved in. It's not cozy and comfortable, but it's going to be okay. You need to move somewhere else because your old paradigm, your old house doesn't exist anymore. So you're moving into the stage. You know you can survive. It's just, it doesn't feel great yet. But even in this state, in this stage, you start to turn down the stress response. You're breathing a little bit easier because you're recognizing, I'm going to make this work. Once you've settled into that new stage and you're comfortable, you make it your own, you put up your curtains, you do whatever you need to do, you slowly move into this beautiful stage. This is stage five. And here's healing, rebirth, and a new worldview. Once you're comfortable, once you're in this stage, you're able, the stress response is turned down, right? You're able, the body is able to heal. Now you're paying more attention to your own self-care. You're giving yourself a little more self-love. You're like, look what I've been through. Now let me take care of my health. Let me prioritize my own needs that I've neglected for so long. You have a new set of beliefs that's just emerging. So, and also remember that table we started out with, the mental and the physical. Now we're paying attention to the emotional and spiritual too. We are so grounded. There's this richness, this depth, this texture, this wisdom. And that's stage five.
So I imagine, and that's great. Those are amazing five stages. I imagine people can get stuck though. And I mean, that's the tip. That's what's hopefully comes out of this, these stages. But what happens to people? Why do they get stuck? Why can't they get through these all five stages?
You know, a big part of the reason why they get stuck, number one, they don't even understand that there's a way out of this. You know, if you imagine a pendulum, it swings like this. You know, most of us kind of want to live under the radar, right? Then something happens and it sends us right here. Here's where we land, but that doesn't mean this is where we stay. And a lot of, here's where we've been given the seat of greatness. And the idea is now we have this momentum and this incentive to swing. But a lot of people get stuck here and they say, well, I'm here. I might as well make friends here, park myself here, plant myself here. And our beliefs confirm this is where I deserve to stay. And that's the biggest misconception. We can ruminate, which is where we make sense of our experience, make meaning from it. But when we marinate in it, where we come to no conclusion or don't do anything to move ourselves forward, we stay stuck.
Right. And so what are your tips on helping people not getting stuck, to keep from getting stuck?
Yeah, it's a process. It really is a process depending on where you are. But one of the first things to really identify is so often, especially with betrayal, because betrayals, it's intentional. So we take it so personally. And the number one thing to realize here is it's not about us. It's almost like we were hit by a stray bullet, but it's not about us. Because that person, if someone's awake and aware, they wouldn't hurt a fly. So that person, for whatever, you know, whatever they're going through, whatever their limitations are, they're doing the best they can with what they have. And it's hard to realize it as you're going through it, because that was, you know, we look at it and say that was so evil. That was so horrible. That was so cruel. But from your level of consciousness, from your level of morality, ethical, what you would never do that. So you see it differently. But just as you've grown, they're not there yet.
Yeah, I think that awareness is great. It's not always easy, but certainly understanding that people have their childhood issues, their hurt, their fears, and all of that come to play, that can sometimes make it not so personal, and realizing that everybody's got their journey to go through. And then also, I mean, what about, you know, helping the person that, you know, what are other things that you could say? I mean, I would think that realizing there is like the silver lining might be not just for the realizing the other person is struggling and what they're going through, but realizing there might be a silver lining in it. But it's not always easy to see that early on, is it?
It's not at all. You know, it's almost like if you look at waves of an ocean, you know, in the beginning, these waves are coming at you so hard and so fast, and you can barely breathe. And what happens is, though, as you're moving through it, you start to make sense and make meaning from it. And there's so much to heal from. You know, originally I was studying something called post-traumatic growth, which is the upside of trauma. How something, the worst thing in life, can teach you something so profound, or can give you a perspective you never would have had that not happened. But with betrayal, we're going for something called post-betrayal transformation, because you're healing from trust issues and rejection and abandonment and self, you know, aspects of yourself, like worthiness, feeling lovable. Because, like, let's say if it's a family betrayal, these are the people who are supposed to love you unconditionally. And if they're doing something so hurtful and you're blindsided by that experience, then you look and say, well, wow, if the people who are supposed to love me the most can absolutely show me in by this action, I'm almost unlovable. How do I rebuild that? So it's a process, and it takes time, and it goes in layers and stages, and forgiveness is a huge piece of this.
Right. And there's the emotional awareness and learning that comes from it. But then you also need to recover physically, right? From that, all of that. Any suggestions on that?
Yeah, you know, what I see so many women doing is they're playing like this one big game of whack-a-mole, where a symptom comes up and they're just doing whatever to tamp down the symptoms. But those symptoms are showing up because of the betrayal. And what happens is they're exhausting themselves further, handling the symptoms one at a time. And the symptoms are showing up because that's a part of this. When you're you know, immune system is suppressed because your stress response is engaged over an insane period of time, things are going to show up. And we're so hard on ourselves, and we keep going and going. It's so interesting. If we were to like break our foot, we'd put it in a cast and we would know it's off limits and we have to stop, let's say, running, if that's what we did. We can go through something like betrayal and we just assume, well, you know, we have to just keep going. But your heart's hurting, you know, your body's struggling, you're physically exhausted, you're mentally exhausted. You can't make sense of this yet. And until you do, we need time. This takes time to process.
Mm-hmm. Because it really is, it's a life crisis, and it's something that until you address it, I mean, I always talk as a naturopathic physician, I always talk about addressing the root cause of whatever your health issue is. And this is a root cause. This betrayal is like a root cause. And that, so if you continue to ignore it, just like if you continue to ignore gut issues, digestion issues, and a physical level, if you continue to ignore this experience, then it's just going to continue to kind of just be there and continue to hurt you and hold you back, right?
And not only continue to be there, it will show up in every relationship you have. Different face.
Truth. I mean, if we don't learn that lesson, it'll just keep showing up and keep showing up. When I notice that I'm saying, why do people always say this? Or why does this always happen? Like, wait a minute. That might be me and I'm attracting. Yeah. So what is the lesson here? And I did University of Santa Monica spiritual psychology program. And if I hadn't done that program, I don't know if I would have even been aware of that, but that really opened my eyes to the fact that if it's, you know, we can create these truths, like these, but they're really not truths, but in our mind, there are truths of like, people are like always like this, or relationships are always like this, or And it's not necessarily true. It's just we're creating it. And until we learn that lesson, until we can process through it, it's just going to keep showing up. And it's such a relief when we have that awareness and able to work through it, and then it stops happening.
And what's also interesting is, you know, transformation, first of all, transformation is messy. It's uncomfortable. It's like ugly cry. I mean, there's just nothing pretty about it, but it's so real. I mean, I am absolutely not the same person I was before this. My husband isn't either. And we actually got married again because we're both two different people. It's that big, but people can change. But sometimes, you know, people will do anything humanly possible to avoid that crash. But sometimes you need that crash to wake you up and realize why you're on the planet, what you're here for, and what you're able to overcome and what you're able to do.
Right. So what are some signs that people might be aware of that they're in this process, but they haven't fully gone through the transformation? What are some things to look through? I mean, you know, you mentioned the five stages, and people might have resonated with the different aspects of that stage, but what are some signs?
You know, what I would say is there are actually a few questions that I would invite everybody to ask themselves, because so often we numb, distract, avoid, because we just don't want to see something. We don't want to face it. And this is like one of the ways that we try to prevent the crisis or avoid doing something about it. So I would invite everybody to just ask themselves these questions. Number one, am I avoiding and distracting something? If so, how? Are you binge watching TV? Are you overeating? Are you drinking? Are you over shopping, overspending, you know, gambling, reckless behavior? These are all things we do, so we don't stop and take a look, because it may be really uncomfortable if we do. The second question would be, what am I pretending not to see? Are you pretending not to see there's a real issue in your relationship? Are you pretending not to see that health issue that needs your attention? Are you pretending not to see you hate your job? What are you pretending not to see? The next one, what's life going to look like in 5 to 10 years if I keep this going? Take a health issue. I mean, you know, what's life going to look like in 5 to 10 years if I ignore this health issue, right? What's my relationship going to look like in 5 to 10 years if I ignore this? What's that job going to look like? And the last question, what could life look like in 5 to 10 years if I change now? Take a look at those questions. You'll see what you're working with.
Right. Let's go back through those. The first one, tell me, remind me what the first one was.
Am I numbing and distracting myself? If so, how?
Yeah. So you mentioned a lot of addictive kind of behaviors. And addiction does seem to be, I mean, it can be somewhat learned and passed on, a little bit of a genetic component to that too, or, you know, picked up from people around us. But it is oftentimes, it is a way of distracting and avoiding. And so that's kind of what you're talking about, right? Are you trying to do some sort of destructive behavior or some sort of avoidance behavior, I guess is what it boils down to, right?
Absolutely. And I saw with the women in my study, sometimes they were doing the that kind of behavior. They were choosing to do something so they didn't see what was happening in their relationship or with their family member. And sometimes it was the betrayer who was doing that. And they're doing that because they can't face something. They're not willing to. They're not willing to take a look and do the work. So to them, the easier option was, well, I'm just going to avoid it. And I'll just do something just to numb and distract. But then what happens is that voice, that internal voice calling us to play bigger gets louder and louder. So the stakes get higher and higher.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What was the second question you?
Yeah. The second one is, what am I pretending not to see?
Right. So pretend, and how do we know what we're pretending not to see? I mean, is it, I mean, if we can't see it, then how are we going to see?
You know, and this is the thing. We're
people
really
have to point it out to us. That's one way.
Sometimes, but there's sometimes when you ask yourself a really tough question and you're just with you and you say, okay, you know what? Come on, let's get down to the bottom of this. You know, and I'll tell you also, with every woman in the study, the number one thing that came up, there were these main stages and then there were these sub themes. And a main sub theme was, they knew something wasn't right and they didn't trust their instincts. So tapping into those instincts to say, what am I not willing to look at?
Right.
Your gut never lies. It just doesn't.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think a lot of times we ignore our instincts. There can be some really persuasive people in our lives that convince us that we don't have to trust our intuition.
And then we think it's us. That's gaslighting. That's what that's all about. Where we just, you know, we think we're crazy. Mm-hmm. Here's where you want to walk around with a notepad, like confirming everything. Like, no, wait a second. I left my keys here. What do you mean you're telling me I didn't do that? And you start thinking you're nuts. And no, this is because someone isn't willing to take responsibility for their own behaviors and actions. So it's much easier to blame you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So trusting your gut, you know, I think it's such an important thing to do that it's easy to ignore it. But I mean, especially if it's something that you keep coming back to, you keep getting a hit on something. Yeah. Stop pretending to not see that. Okay. All right. And then the next question.
Well, and I'll add to that too. Trust is that is so huge. And one of the biggest things I saw also was because think about what happens. You trust is shattered. You don't trust your betrayer, obviously, and you don't trust yourself because like, how did I not see this coming? So this is where spirituality really came into play. And it was the women who were religious gravitated more towards the spiritual aspect of their religion, or they just gave up religion altogether and went towards spirituality. And one of the reasons was they were looking for a connection to make meaning out of their experience. But the other reason was they reasoned, well, if I can't trust you and I can't trust me, at least I can trust in something bigger. Let me start rebuilding trust there. Trust is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and that's a good point, because maybe it's not like your gut that you're trusting, but if you pray and you're getting insight in that kind of way, in more of a religious, spiritual way, then that's certainly something to pay attention to. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big one. And you asked me about the third question. The third question is, what's life going to look like in 5 to 10 years if I do nothing?
Yeah. I think that's a great one. And it's almost like, I know I've heard people say, you know, things like, if you were, you know, to go to your funeral today, and what, you know, like what would be the lingering things, or the things that you wish you had done, or the things that you'd wish you'd said, or those finished, like, and that, I mean, that's kind of a variation on that, right? Mm-hmm. What is it that you have going on now? Is it where you want to be, and how what kind of unresolved stuff?
And it's creating an awareness around your life. Mm-hmm. It's taking a look at things and saying, okay, look at, take an honest look at where this relationship is, project it 5 to 10 years out, where you have 5 to 10 years of not speaking up and saying, you know, what your needs are, or with, you know, or with your health issue, 5 to 10 years of not going in to check on that, whatever. What's that going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then the last question was a reverse of that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is where people, you know, they're so afraid of that change because it's scary. But this is where crisis is such a gift, because nothing serves as a greater catalyst than get you to move than a wake up, than a shake up. And this is where a crisis is a wonderful thing, because you are forced. Your old life doesn't exist anymore. You know, I use this example of a house. Resilience is bouncing back, bringing back to restoring. And like it, with an example of a house, like let's say your house needs a new boiler. You get a boiler, that's resilience. It needs a new paint job. You paint, that's resilience. You need a new roof, get a new roof, that's resilience. Transformations like this. A tornado comes by and levels your house. A new boiler's not going to fix it. A new paint job's not going to fix it. A new roof's not going to fix it. In fact, all three aren't going to fix it. And you have every right to look at the lot where your house once stood and say, oh my gosh, this is the most horrible, tragic thing that's ever happened. And you'd be right. And you can call all your friends over and say, look at this. This is so awful. And they'd agree. And you can mourn the loss of your house for the remainder of your days. Should you choose to rebuild your house, though, there's nothing there. You can build whatever you want. You can build the most magnificent house that had everything the old house didn't have. That's transformation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an opportunity. So what are you doing to, because you, so you did this study with the women. Mm-hmm. What are you doing now to help other people with that are going through this, to help them bring awareness and transformation?
Yeah, I have a 6-week program that walks women through these stages. They transform. And then that leads to one of two different certifications. Every woman in the study said she would have loved support in this area because it's so unique. If you've been through betrayal, there's so much shame, judgment, embarrassment, all of that. So I'm certifying these women, once they go through the 6-week program, to be a certified PBT, post-betrayal transformation support group host, or a certified PBT practitioner. So this way, a doctor, a coach, a therapist, if someone comes into your office, your center with certain symptoms, you know, okay, it's tied to betrayal, and you have this arsenal of what to offer them. So my intention is to get these hosts and practitioners in every state, in every country, in every town, and then I can retire.
So you said it's a 6-week?
Mm-hmm.
So why 6 weeks?
Because I wanted to show these women that you can go, it doesn't matter if you're in that stage 2, you can be in a stage 5. You can be, it takes a lot of things, a willingness, it takes a bunch of things, but you can be in that stage 5 by the end of that 6 weeks. You can. There was a woman in the program and she said, oh my gosh, Debbie, this would have saved me 20 years of pain. It can move you. And you know, so I don't want them there for a long time. I want you to get your life back.
Right. And so why are you focusing on women more than, and not men?
You know, the study was around women, and it's funny because the school contacted me and they said they're already looking to do the next evolution of the study. I don't know if men experience it differently, different cultures experience it differently, different age groups. I studied women 40 to 65. And this is what we discovered. So it's me. So it's what I know. We may, you know, work with men next, but right now it's all about the women.
Right. And I mean, because certainly men go through betrayal too.
They absolutely do.
And there's no denying that. So I want to make sure that any men listening or, you know, even the women, just like, it's not like we're the only ones experiencing.
No, not at all.
And then you're also interesting the age range for this. So 40 to 65, is that what you said?
Those are the women I studied. And what's really interesting too is originally I was studying women who've been betrayed by a family member, a partner, or a friend. And when I was looking around, when these participants were coming my way, I couldn't find anybody who was broken. Of course, we're never broken, bent, mm-hmm. enough from a friend. Mm-hmm. Friends anger you. We get so mad. We may cut them off, but they don't get you like a family member or a partner. So I changed the study.
And when you say partner, it's not just in relationships, romantic relationships, but also business partners can do that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
Yeah. And the way it works
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. The way it works is the more we trusted and we're dependent upon that person, the bigger the betrayal.
Right. Yeah. Because if you're in business with somebody, you create something together. This is like your baby too. And there's a lot of trust that goes into that. So to be betrayed by a business partner, I've seen that just crush people. So absolutely same thing. And then it's interesting though, with the age range, I wonder if it would be different if you studied women 20 to 40 and their experience. I kind of think that it would be the same. It's just that maybe women 40 to 65 have more examples of betrayal, so they can notice the pattern of what's been happening in their lives.
It could be. And I'll tell you too, you know, I really thought, and you're supposed to, as a researcher, you're not supposed to go in with any expectations, but I couldn't help it. So I really tried.
It's human nature. Yeah.
Right. And I assumed that the women who were the hardest hit, I mean, you'd hear their story and say, how do these women get out of bed? You would think they would grow the least because they had the most to overcome. I'll tell you, they grew the most. The ones who numbed and medicated and didn't face it head on and go in there and slay all those dragons and face everything grew the least.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that, I mean, how does one go from being that person that is in denial about it to, I mean, other than the fact that maybe some of these women were portrayed like their stories were worse, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a bigger transformation, right? But what you're saying is that it's about being open to the change, right? No.
Being open, being willing, facing it head on. And what I also saw was the women who had the most physical symptoms. I mean, I had a woman in there and she had stroke symptoms. I mean, this woman was so sick, she spoke up the least. She didn't talk about it. She didn't reach out for support. She struggled the most. The ones who found that support in a trusted other, you know, whether that's a therapist, a very close family member or friend, there were certain things that they did. They healed more than the ones who just didn't speak up, accepted, you know, what they should never have accepted. Physically, they absolutely accelerated aging. They were the hardest hit on every level.
Yeah, and I think it's often hard for people to speak up about their needs. And I think, I mean, maybe it's not right for me to say this, but it seems like it's true more for women in a way. I'm not sure, but I think we have this tendency because we tend to be caretakers and we're taking care of kids and, you know, maybe our parents even, or, you know, elderly parents or, you know, people in our community, our partners, whatever it is, we tend to be very much caretakers. And for you and I, like clients and patients, right? So then it becomes hard to ask for help or to be open to speaking up and being open and saying, okay, this is where I'm hurt. This is what my needs are. This is what I need to share.
And to a fault. And another one of those sub themes was that we protect our betrayer at our own expense. Mm-hmm. We don't want them looking bad. We don't want people judging, getting angry at them, whatever it was. We're like, we just won't speak up. And all it did is hurt us. And that's what we do. And we're so used to caring for everybody else. And even in my own scenario, I remember it was clients, kids, crash. That's all I did. Yeah. And it was, we just don't take care of ourselves the way we need to.
So then one of the first things is to get help, right? If you feel like you're in the process of being betrayed, something big is happening in your life, you're going through a life crisis, where you just feel that you're in pain, you're being betrayed, you're suffering. The first thing is to get help, to ask for help, right?
And it's so hard to do.
Alone. Yeah,
you're not alone, and we're so good at giving, and we stink at getting the support that we need. But it's so because we. And I think one of the hardest things too, is we don't understand it. We're in such a state of confusion and chaos because this makes no sense on any level. So we're not even thinking of getting help. We just can't even process this. It's that big.
Yeah. So reaching out to a therapist, to loved ones, other people, maybe, you know, of course, outside the betrayal, wherever the betrayal is happening, you got to reach out beyond that. So maybe it's a friend, family member, social worker. I mean, there are a lot of different people that you can reach out to for help for that initial step, right?
And absolutely. And that's exactly why I'm forming these groups, because we need to know we are not alone in this. It's more common than we think.
Right. And I think that just having a different perspective of somebody else looking at it and being able to give you feedback on, yes, you are in a tough situation and this is not right, that you should not be treated this way or this should not be happening to you. Because I think sometimes in our heads we think, oh, well, this is just, I'm used to this. I deserve this. I walked myself into this. I signed up for this. I, you know, blaming yourself for being in it and then realizing that you're stuck or think that you're stuck. So having a different perspective and getting help and being involved with some. So I'm so glad that you're doing this, Debbie. There's such a need for it. Tell everybody how they can find you, connect with you. And then I think you also have a gift for the audience, a downloadable free gift. Yeah,
I do. They should really just go to PBT, Post-Betrayal Transformation, PBTinstitute.com. Okay. It's all right there. And there's a quiz to see if somebody has post-betrayal syndrome, if they're struggling with those symptoms. It'll tell you right away. If you're unlikely, you're likely, you're very likely to be struggling.
Great. So this would be a great thing for, you know, if you're listening, watching, maybe it's something that you want to take, or if you know somebody else that might be struggling, you might gently suggest that they take it with them. However we can help each other out, right?
Absolutely. And transformation is waiting on the other side.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Debbie, for coming on today. I really appreciate it, all that you're doing.
Thanks so much.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today and got some information that may be valuable for yourself or a loved one that you know. So feel free to share this interview with others. And if you'd like to learn more about Debbie and take the quiz that she mentioned or other information about her, you can go to thespadoctor.com, go to the podcast page with her interview, and you'll find all the information and links there. And while you're there, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows and information. And also, if you haven't taken the skin quiz already, you can go to theskinquiz.com. It could give you great information about what your skin is trying to tell you about your health and what you can do about it. Just go to theskinquiz.com. Also, I invite you to join me on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and join the conversation there. And I'll see you next time on the Spa Doctor Podcast.